I'd like to invite you to turn your New Testaments back to the scripture of our reading this morning, 1 Corinthians chapter 7. If you're using a pew Bible, that's page 770 in the pew Bible. While you're doing that, let me just make a note about our worship service this evening. We're going to have the pleasure of hearing Brother Dudley Ross Spears preach to us tonight. Brother Dudley Ross Spears is the father of our Ross Spears, and he's visiting for the weekend. And he has been a gospel preacher for many, many years, and I have profited quite a bit in my life by especially reading some articles that have been written by Brother Spears. So come back this evening and be prepared for that treat. In the lesson this morning, I'd like for us to think about how tightly we are holding on to the things of this world. We have to be involved, certainly, in many things that are of an earthly and temporal nature just to live here and to survive here. But the things of this world being tangible, being the things that we can touch and hold and see and feel, sometimes these things can almost, without our realizing it, take precedence in our lives. And it may not be that we consider ourselves to be overtly materialistic, but nonetheless, there are things about this world that can grab our attention and take our focus off of spiritual things. In 1 Corinthians chapter 7, Paul is writing about marriage primarily and dealing with questions of marriage and its responsibilities and divorce and the difficulties that Christians would have in their own day and time with marriages with unbelievers and other complications. But in verses 25 through 28 of 1 Corinthians 7, he's dealing with what he's going to call a present distress, that is, some kind of a circumstance that's left undefined that's causing trauma for the brethren in Corinth. And he's advising them in this particular section that we're going to look at relative to marrying with the troubles that they're presently facing. So let's read verses 25 through 28 of 1 Corinthians 7. Now concerning virgins, I have no commandment from the Lord, yet I give judgment as one whom the Lord in His mercy has made trustworthy. I suppose, therefore, I suppose, therefore, that this is good because of the present distress, that it is good for a man to remain as he is. Are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be loosed. Are you loose from a wife? Do not seek a wife. But even if you do marry, you have not sinned. And if a virgin marries, she has not sinned. Nevertheless, such will have trouble in the flesh. But I would spare you. God has given us marriage for joy and pleasure, for great enrichment, not only in the things of this world, but there are so many spiritual lessons that we can learn through these relationships. And by being married and by being a parent, we are able to focus outside of ourselves. And I think in family life, God gives us the challenge of thinking beyond just our selfish needs and interests. There are many blessings and many benefits that God has built into the marital relationship and the family that springs from it. But even as good as marriage and family are, under the right set of circumstances, they can become an interference rather than an enhancement spiritually. Paul again says that there is a present distress that he is writing in relation to. Verse 26, because of the present distress, it's good for a man to remain as he is. And I think this tends to color quite a few things that are said by Paul in this particular chapter. I think it's probably difficult for us in our cultural setting to understand circumstances that could make marriage a disadvantage. That probably is not in our thinking. In fact, it's probably taken for granted in our culture. Marriage is just something that is naturally going to happen when I reach a perhaps certain level of maturity and I meet a certain right person and everything sort of clicks together, that marriage just happens like breathing. And what Paul is saying here is there are some circumstances where it is going to be counterproductive spiritually if you marry. Hold a finger here in 1 Corinthians 7 and turn back to Jeremiah 16. That's page 519 in the Pew Bible. Jeremiah chapter 16. Jeremiah is prophesying during the years leading up to the end of the kingdom of Judah and the ultimate destruction of Jerusalem. As a prophet of God, he's trying to preach to the people that they need to repent and bring their lives back in harmony with the will of God, and they'll be spared. But even as he preaches, the message sort of changes in tone. After a while, it's evident that the people are not going to repent, and Jeremiah begins preaching to them they should acquiesce. They should give in to the Babylonian Empire and go off into captivity, so God has decreed it, and make a life as best as they can make for themselves. In other words, things are happening in Judah that are going to have a horrible outcome. In chapter 16, beginning in verse 1, the Lord also spoke to me, Jeremiah says, saying, "You shall not take a wife, nor shall you have sons or daughters in this place. For thus says the Lord concerning sons and daughters who are born in this place, and concerning their mothers who bore them and their fathers who begot them in this land, they shall die gruesome deaths. They shall not be lamented, nor shall they be buried, but they shall be like refuse on the face of the earth. They shall be consumed by the sword and by famine, and their corpses shall be meat for the birds of heaven and for the beasts of the earth." Jeremiah lived in a time where being married and having a family was going to be a severe challenge. And it's been noted by more than one person commenting on 1 Corinthians 7. There's nothing that'll make a coward out of a brave man more quickly than his family being threatened. It's one thing for us to stand for the Lord and be faithful and to determine that if necessary, I'll give my life for the Lord. But when that threat is turned away from me and onto my family, in whatever degree, when my family is threatened, now my faith in God takes on a whole different perspective. Most of us probably in the crunch time could be faithful to the Lord if we're committed, even unto death. But what about the death of my child? What about the death of my spouse? What about other hardships that are being brought upon us in the society in which we live because Christianity is held in such disfavor? And so what Paul is saying here is it's good for a man to remain as he is, to not undergo severe changes in your station in life because you're facing some circumstances that are going to complicate things if you make certain choices. Now, I'd like to point out as we think along these lines that choices in life often come down to more than the question of, is it sinful? That's certainly a good question to start with. Should I do this? Should I choose this or should I choose that? Is one of them sin and one of them righteousness? We've got to determine what is approved of God in terms of His clear statements on the subject. But in determining what we ought to do in a given circumstance, we've got to go beyond, is it sinful? Sometimes we have to ask, is it wise? How's it going to impact others? Or we might need to stop and ask ourselves, not only perhaps may it be lawful, but where is it going to take me given the potential circumstances that I'll be facing later? Is this something that's going to enhance my spirituality? Is it something that's going to lead me closer to God, though in and of itself it may be lawful? But is it going to bring an influence into my life that takes me further from God or closer to God? And that's what Paul's trying to say to these people. I'm giving you advice. Now, obviously, as he writes, he acknowledges that it is his judgment. He says in verse 25, I have no commandment from the Lord, yet I give judgment as one whom the Lord in His mercy has made trustworthy. Paul was worth listening to, even when he was just giving advice. And what he says is, because of the present distress, you're going to have trouble in the flesh, verse 28, and I would spare you that trouble. And so what Paul is saying here and in the verses that follow is that you should hold on lightly to the things of this world. Do not invest yourself fully in this world things, emotionally or otherwise, because it could be that because of circumstances, your devotion to the Lord is going to be compromised when the situation becomes severe. Verses 29 through 31. But this I say, brethren, the time is short, so that from now on, even those who have wives should be as though they had none. Those who weep as though they did not weep. Those who rejoice as though they did not rejoice. Those who buy as though they did not possess. And those who use this world as not misusing it, for the form of this world is passing away. Those verses can be a little bit perplexing. What does he mean when he says those who have wives should be as though they have none? Well, certainly he's not telling people to divorce. He's already covered that earlier in the book, and he wouldn't say that anyway. But I think what he's saying is that we must not choose our mates over Christ. We must hold on lightly, even to the most devoted and committed relationship in this world, and that's marriage. Even when it comes to our partners who are termed in the Scriptures one flesh partners. My husband, my wife, in whom I have invested so much of myself, mentally and emotionally, so much of my time and effort and energy in this life, even in that relationship, we should be as though we were not married. Which I think is an exaggerated way of saying we don't need to hold on to our mates so tightly that if it comes down to a choice between the Lord or our mate, we choose our mate. Now again, I think it's difficult for us in our culture, in our time, to understand that kind of pressure. That degree of stress where we've got to make a choice between the Lord and our mate. I think that choice needs to be made perhaps in less severe contexts in our society. But in this present distress, be it persecution or whatever, Paul is saying, hang on lightly. Those who weep as though they did not weep. Those who rejoice as though they did not rejoice. What does that mean? Well, I don't think it means necessarily to be stoic or long-faced or just sort of shuffle miserably through this life. I think what he's saying is, don't let the highs of this life take you so high that you lose sight of what it really means to be here in this world. Don't let the rejoicing of this life, and there are many reasons in this world to rejoice, and to take great pleasure in the things of this world that are not sinful, be it a birth of a child, or a place that you visit, or friendships that you establish, which we talked about last Sunday night. There are wonderful, pleasurable things that are not wrong in this life. Don't let the highs take you so high that you lose sight of the overall big picture. And then there are lows in this life. Those that weep as though they did not weep. Don't be so grief-stricken. Don't be so disappointed in this world or in people or in circumstances that, again, you lose sight of God. I've said this before. There's an old brother in his 80s becoming very feeble when I first started preaching. And I'm sure he could detect a little discouragement in me from time to time. And one time he came to me and he said, Jim, it's okay to be discouraged. Don't get disgusted. I'll get that out. Just don't get disgusted. It's okay to be discouraged. Just don't get disgusted. Don't let the lows of life just wipe you out spiritually to where you lose sight of the Lord again. You lose sight of what really is important in this world. Because if we're so wedded to things in this life and things that perhaps may cause us joy and then they're taken away or failure comes into our life in some way, the lows can be so low, again, we don't see the Lord anymore. Then he says, those who buy as those who do not possess. That's probably fairly obvious. Don't get so wrapped up in ownership. It's mine. It's mine. I've got my things, and my life is about acquiring my things, and you know, appointing my house like Southern Living, and having the car of my dream. Don't get so wrapped up in this world that it's about your possessions and accumulating things. Be as though you did not possess. We read in the New Testament about Christians in the book of Hebrews, for example, whose things were taken away from them by persecution. Well, if we are all wrapped up in our things and someone forcibly comes in, especially for our faith, and takes those things away, we might begin to find out just how wedded we were to those things and didn't realize it. But they can produce such discouragement, potentially, that we lose sight of the Lord. Those who use the world, or use the world but not misuse the world. That word misuse is the idea of using to the full, sating oneself. And here's the challenge. So much of this world requires so much of us. Our jobs require so much of us, and our children require so much of us. Such an investment of time and energy. So much of our mental outlook is shaped by things in this world. But again, don't let those things consume you. Certain hardships will show that our investment in earthly things is misplaced. And it might be that very subtly we become to think more highly of this world than we should. Our trust, our hope, our joy becomes related to things of the world. And then suddenly something comes along like the present distress in Corinth. And the things that we put so much stock in are taken away. He says in verse 31, for the form of this world is passing away. I think what he's getting at there, and that's a bit of a difficult phrase, but I think what he's saying, he's not saying the world is about to be destroyed. What he's saying is the landscape changes. The cultural landscape in which all of us are living our lives, it changes, and sometimes changes very quickly. And I think you probably have to be a little bit older to appreciate that. I know when I was younger, it sort of appeared, because I wasn't aware of the bigger world around, it appeared like things were just sort of the same, year by year by year. And if you look at life just from that standpoint, year by year, you might not see a whole lot of change. But when you begin looking at life in 10-year and 20-year increments, you begin to see a lot of transition. I'll tell you, our world today is changing before our eyes. And there are things affecting our culture that are now global. Things are changing very, very swiftly. It may not appear to be so, but it'll be more clear as you live a few years and you begin to pay attention, really, to what's happening. Political power ebbs and flows. When we lived in England from 90 to 94, the Tories, the Conservative Party, was firmly entrenched under the leadership of John Major. For the last at least 10 years, it's been under the Labour Party, Tony Blair. And Democrats rule for a while, and Republicans rule for a while. Political power ebbs and flows. Prosperity and poverty swap places. We can't get too wrapped up in this life, because the face of the cultural landscape changes all of the time. And if I have come to define myself, listen, if I've come to define myself by certain cultural standards and values, where am I when those values change? I define myself by my job. I define myself by my house, my neighborhood. I define myself by my children. If we come to define who we are by external and cultural factors, even family factors, which is what Paul's talking about here, and then those things change, where am I? Who am I? If that's how I've come to define myself. Well, Paul then in verses 32 through 35 talks specifically about the distractions of marriage. But I want you to be without care, he says. He who is unmarried cares for the things that belong to the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But he who is married cares about the things of the world, how he may please his wife. There's a difference between a wife and a virgin. The unmarried woman cares about the things of the Lord, that she may be holy both in body and spirit. But she who is married cares about the things of the world, how she may please her husband. And this I say for your own profit, not that I may put a leash on you, but for what is proper, that you may serve the Lord without distraction. What he does is he draws a contrast here between those that are unmarried and those that are married, and he's not talking in this context about sinful things per se. What he's basically saying is this: those who are unmarried are able to focus more on spiritual things. I wonder if that's what happens among single people in our culture. The expectation of marriage is so strong that it may be that those that are single are not so tempted to focus on spiritual things. Rather, they're focused on when they can get married and how life may be better when they're married. And so much investment may be placed in the process of trying to get married that the focus may not be among the single on serving the Lord without distraction. But nonetheless, this is what Paul is saying. Those who are single are able to concentrate on the things of the Lord and please the Lord. That the virgin may be holy in body and spirit. That's not to say that those that are married are unholy in some fashion. What he's saying is they're more single-minded. They're more devoted to the Lord without the clutter of this world responsibilities and obligations. On the other hand, speaking of those that are married, he says both husbands and wives attend to the things of their mates, and that is not wrong. He's not saying it's sinful to do so. What he is saying is those that are married and those especially that have children and children that are younger and still at home and dependent, those people are divided and fragmented in their responsibilities. Yes, serving the Lord is still paramount. That undergirds everything else. But serving the Lord might also mean serving my wife or my husband. Being faithful to the Lord might mean giving my children their due and nurturing them and teaching them. And thus I am saddled with many more obligations and responsibilities. And I'm burdened with many more emotional ties, which under normal circumstances is a wonderful thing. Again, family life is given to us for our benefit and our blessing. But based on the present distress, it can become an impediment in our faithfulness to God. And so Paul says, I want you to be without care in verse 32. In verse 35, I say this for your profit. I want you to be able to serve the Lord without distraction. Marriage is something we might call a lawful distraction. It's lawful, but it's a distraction nonetheless. And what I must be so careful about in my life is becoming imbalanced and disproportionate and putting so much more effort and energy into this life, which already takes a lot of effort and energy, that I do not have time anymore for Christ. As we draw our thoughts to a close, let me make a couple of suggestions. First of all, even without present distress, such as whatever it was the Corinthians were living through, it is easy to focus on this world, especially in our society. In class this morning, Martin was talking about the people that he's met, the Christians that he's met in Zimbabwe, and how brutal and austere their lives are. Many of them don't have enough to eat, and they live in grass huts, and the land has been ravaged by drought and famine, and we've all seen pictures, even when Martin came back from Zimbabwe, if we were here at the time, seen pictures of how desolate the landscape is. There's just not a lot on offer in Zimbabwe. No cable. No softball games. No golf. Really not much of anything. Not much of anything that tends to distract us from where our true focus should lie. Not, again, things sinful in and of themselves. Last Tuesday night, Melanie and I had the joy and privilege of attending softball game. One of the teams of which is comprised by several of our members here. And it was very entertaining, and the price of admission was right. So we went, and we enjoyed ourselves immensely. And I don't understand all the particulars, but it was a playoff game of some kind. And the team that won between the two teams playing that evening were going to play in the championship game the next night, Wednesday night. And so our brethren came through, and they won their game. And they immediately forfeited to the other team and said, "You guys are going to be playing in the championship game tomorrow night." Of course, when an elder's the catcher, what else are you going to do? Not that any of them would have wanted to do anything different. And that may sound trivial, but let me ask you the question. How many Christians miss worshiping God for such trivialities? Frankly, it was heartening to see a group of guys having a good time and something clean and moral and enjoying competition and win the game and walk off and say, "You guys, you know, hope you win tomorrow night." That made me feel good. But how often can just the insignificant things of this world take over our thinking and rise and rise and rise on our priority list to the point that we might find ourselves opting for the game, the championship game at that on Wednesday night, rather than to come and be with the Lord's people and to focus on spiritual things, to keep those things in proper perspective, even without a present distress, and maybe worse without a present distress. Because if there's no present distress, things may be going along well and we're prospering, and then all kinds of opportunities open up to us. Folks in Zimbabwe don't have many opportunities. We've got all the opportunities we can engage in and more. So even without a present distress, the challenge to hold on to spiritual things might even be greater. Distraction doesn't necessarily mean missing worship. And sometimes, you know, we reduce this thing down to the lowest common denominator. Well, whatever job or whatever house I have, whatever it takes to maintain that house, whatever other challenges of life, as long as I don't miss worship, I'm okay. Is that all there is to being a Christian? So long as I arrange my schedule so that I don't miss worship, that's admirable, but is that all? Am I so involved in this life that I have no time for individual study groups that are going on? Yeah, I'd like to come to that Roman study, but, you know, I've got this or I've got that. What about time for prayer? We all tend to complain, "Don't have time for prayer, don't have time for prayer." And granted, we live busy lives. How much of the busyness is self-inflicted? So now we don't have time for prayer because we filled our lives up so much with voluntary things and things that aren't wrong in and of themselves, but now I don't have time for prayer. I don't have time for visiting. David's been handing out some cards to us of people that have come here to visit that we might just make a 5-minute drop-in visit. "Hello, thanks for coming. Glad you came. Can we do anything for you?" "Well, I've got this obligation. I've got that obligation." You see, our lives as Christians is so much broader sometimes than we tend to think of. Certainly broader than just attending worship. And we can saddle ourselves and burden ourselves so much with extraneous matters, things that really in the end don't amount to anything. And our devotion to the Lord is interfered with. How would you fare if a present distress came upon all of us? And this is a question you'll have to examine for yourself. I don't mean to accuse by asking it. But if we suffered a severe economic downturn, if we were no longer the leading economic power and our economy turned to be control by outside interests, global interests. And it seems that's becoming more the case as time goes on. How would you deal with that? What if persecution arose over teaching and practice that we believe to be commanded by the Lord? And certainly our society is moving further and further away from any biblical type standards. But if in fact it took a severe legal turn, how would you fare? How would it make you look at the things of this world? What if an outbreak of disease hit, an epidemic, which we're being warned about? Ross could probably tell us more about that, or some others working at the CDC, but certainly we're being warned more and more and more about the possibility of a pandemic, a global outbreak of some sort. What if it hit here? What if it hit hard? How would you look at the things of this world? What attraction does this world hold in your mind that might threaten your fidelity to the Lord if, in fact, the present distress came? I don't think we should wish for it, and I think we need to be thankful for the conditions in which we live, the prosperity, the health. We have what we live in is a culture and a time of so many resources that can be used for the Lord. Look what the Lord has given to us. Look how the Lord has blessed us. What a stewardship we have. Maybe the time might come we don't have the resources we have now. How would we look back at this day and say, what do we do with that when we have it? We have great opportunities. We have great resources. Let's not wish for the day of hardship, but it may come. And if it does, where will we be? How wedded are we to the things of this world? Even to the point that Paul is saying about the most basic and fundamental relationship in this life, it's really better if you do not marry. It's going to cause you great trouble. May we hold on to the Lord more tightly than we hold on to anything else. The things of this world can be taken away. They can be undermined so easily. Our exhortation as we close is that you live your life day by day hanging on to the Lord. And it may be that you've never committed yourself to Him. You've never devoted yourself to Him with your whole heart, body, and soul. And this is a time and an opportunity that you may do that. Certainly not that it must be done at an assembly. But here we are, we're gathered together. We've got some good news on the board behind me there. Jose is baptized, another one in a Spanish group. But this is an opportunity for you. One more moment of time, one more opportunity God is placing before you to obey the gospel. And we're ready and prepared and certainly willing and glad to help you in any way that we can to help you in your life go forward from this day on with your priorities in the right place, serving the Lord first and holding on lightly to the things of this world. Can we help you even while we stand and sing?